The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. Some people might say that it's a fairly flat fixture card for us to look back on, but we're here with our newly naturalised patriotic fervour to wave some flags and get very excited about some narrow wins, just in case our minders are watching. I'm your host, Steve Crooks, and I'm joined by our regular experts on all matters Chinese football, Cameron Wilson from Shanghai. How are things, Cam?
I'm good, Steve. Happy April Fool's Day, everybody.
Yeah, this is going to be great, because whatever we say, we couldn't make up any rumours that are going to be worse than some of the actual news stories we've got to cover this week. And also joined as usual by Brandon Chemers in Beijing. Brandon, how are things with you?
Very green Beijing, Steve.
Well, let's start with the story of you and your friends and those tickets that you snapped up in your fervor, as you mentioned. The derby, it's one of those where I think you'd have to say that 1-0 actually flatters the losing team, right?
I don't think so. I mean, Renhe, they were definitely up for this match. We saw last year that they were up for it. This year they were as well. It was very difficult for Guan. Yudabao, there was a penalty, a foul on Jonathan Vieira. Yudabao took the penalty and the keeper saved it. And yeah, there weren't a lot of chances. It was a very tight match, and you end up saving himself from the embarrassment and scored off a header late in the second half, or a little past the hour mark. And Guan mercifully took away 3 points from this one.
Yeah, and I think we're seeing already, you know, those teams that we expected to be at the top, you almost can't drop any points at the moment, because Shanghai International Port Group continued their kind of perfect start to the season as well, Cam. A bizarre game at Hebei with a couple of awful goals, one very nice one to win it. It just feels like no one can defend in the CSL anymore, and the way forward is having slightly better forwards and goalkeepers than your opponents, maybe?
It was a quite strange game. I noticed a fairly terrible goalkeeping error from Gong Xiaofeng, who, funnily enough, used to play for Xinhua. Maybe the curse of the Xinhua goalkeepers followed him to Hebei, but I think SIPG were perhaps rode the luck a bit, but definitely there's plenty of April Fool's Day type goings on the pitch as well the weekend for us to ruminate over, and that game was certainly one of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth checking out some of the goals. The whole defence and goalkeeper falling asleep for the first one there, particularly highlight, although the winner was lovely to give a balanced view, as we always strive to here on the pod. I mean, speaking of April Fool's Day goings on the pitch, I think one of the big stories that's just emerging out of the weekend is what's otherwise quite a low-key game, really, with Jiangsu edging it over Wuhan. But Brandon, it turned out to be a very, very eventful kind of end to the game for Wuhan's Brazilian forward Rafael da Silva. Scored a goal and then got himself sent off for, I'm not really sure what for. Do you want to enlighten anyone who's not seen the video yet?
And this happened basically right after he scored a goal. He fouled a Jiangsu defender and then kicked the ball, and it hit the Jiangsu defender in the face, sort of a la Oscar, the incident last season. It's really difficult. If you watch it, I mean, he kicked it right in the guy's face, but it was sort of, you know, it's almost impossible to say that it was intentional. I doubt it was intentional. He wrote a very bad, a badly handwritten note to the CFA or to whoever that it wasn't intentional. It's ludicrous, but we know after the Oscar suspension, he has to be suspended. There's just, the CFA has no way around it. Even though Hebei has come out very quickly and Wuhan has come out very quickly and punished him pretty severely. I have a feeling the CFA, it's punishment bingo time.
I was just going to say, Cam, what's your favourite part of this? I mean, the fact that even if you slow it down and watch it in microscopic detail, it doesn't look that violent, or that he has this wonderful, like, 8-year-old schoolboy, you know, the dog ate my homework, I'm really sorry kind of letter.
I just think it's such a it's such an appropriate occurrence to be discussing on April 1st. This is the day we're recording the pod, for those who don't know. It's just really funny. Brandon's right. If the CFA are going to be consistent, then they have to suspend him. Unfortunately, as we've seen that in the CSL, that it's even for kicking balls, it's possible in some circumstances to be suspended and punished for doing that. So I think Raphael's attempt to try and get away with it with his... It's just really funny writing, really funny handwritten letter. I mean, I don't want to make fun of non-native English speakers' writing abilities. It's not the point, but it just looks really silly. It's like written in pencil, and it really looks like a little kid's letter to the teacher, asking him to let him off with something naughty he's done. But I'm afraid the CFA is really unlikely to do that. If you look at the replay, I just don't see how you can really look at that and think there was some really malicious attempt to injure the player just by kicking the ball away. Very difficult to look at it and say that it was something deliberate and malicious. But unfortunately, I think he's going to be delayed. Latest punishment bingo participant.
You know, I wouldn't say, I mean, again, I it's hard to say what's in a player's heart, but I mean, he kicked the ball right in the guy's face, and it definitely recalls the Oscar incident. But again, it's the sort of situation, it doesn't really look malicious, but it looks pretty bad. I mean, it does look pretty bad. And the CFA, they have to punish him.
Well, it does. It does look like bad to a point, but the point is that when the punishments are so over the top, that makes these issues all the more sensitive and awkward. That you're given a punishment for something which maybe looks bad, but you can't prove there was malicious intent. So this is why the punishments need to be more reasoned. And unfortunately, these mad kind of random or fairly extreme punishments for these things we've had in recent years, like Oscar getting 8 games last year, it just means that the punishment is not fitting the crime.
Yeah, we haven't had a lot of punishment bingo to talk about yet this season, so it is good that we're going to have an early case of some crazy suspensions there. I mean, everyone who's been suspended thus far has kind of mostly done something that in most leagues would at least earn you a suspension as well, so it's about time. I think we're due one of these. One other thing that we're due is a chance to talk a bit more, Cam, about Gio Moreno. And I know that there's a lot of criticism, certainly from your pen, flying around about Shenhua finally getting off the board. But a lovely late winner from the captain who's become Shenhua's all-time top goal scorer, which is a remarkable kind of stat in itself. And it's such a Gio way to do it, you know. He's surrounded by absolute dross. He's completely anonymous for 89 minutes of the whole game. And then, you know, he just pops up in the area to wave his wand of a left foot and score a kind of winning goal that's going to be crucial for his team. The man certainly knows how to do it in his own kind of inimitable style, huh?
He does. I would say that it is the kind of thing he's been known for in the past, ghosting into a game late in the day or at some point during the match, providing a flash of inspiration which gave Shenhua 3 points or rescued 1 point. But unfortunately for Gio, the fact is that he has not done this very often over the last year or so. In fact, the word on the street in Shenhua is that since he didn't make the cut for the Colombia squad for the World Cup last time round, he's been a bit down in the dumps. I think Gio has been a fantastic player, and he's one of the all-time legendary CSL Fawners, based on not only his considerable talent and his rather laid-back attitude to playing football, but also the fact that he's just simply been around for a great number of years. There's not many players who have played as many CSL games as a Fawner as he has. But, it certainly was it was a really terrible game. I mean, both teams just couldn't even string two balls together. And Shenhua were, frankly, pretty fortunate to win. And that is often the case when Shenhua win away games. But I'm sure the blue three quarters of Shanghai are not complaining today.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I'd love to have a whole podcast about Gio and his left foot, we'll save that one for another day. Brandon, some worrying signs for the home side in that game, though. Hernan taking some dog's abuse from their supporters, and it's relatively early in the season for them to be getting so worried, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Hernan has a very strong supporter section. You know, when they win, they're one of the only teams in the CSL that, you know, we've seen flares out of their supporter section. We've seen the players go up and wave the supporters' flag sort of thing. They have a very close relationship, but at the same time, the Hunan supporters, like supporter sections, tend to be tend to overreact very quickly. And, you know, after three matches to lambast your players about their performance against a weak Shenhua side, for sure, but still, it seemed a little over the top, a little early for the histrionics of it all.
A team which is permanently, or most seasons, facing relegation, Henan, getting beat by Shenhua at home, they're being so upset by that, it shows you how far Shenhua have sunk.
It's fortunate as well that, well, from a Shenhua perspective, that Henan don't have anyone who can finish, because they certainly carved out a few chances there, and, you know, the ball boys behind the goal certainly kept busy by their forwards. But I think that's enough for the fixture card that we looked back on. It's relatively slim pickings to look forward to next week as well, I feel. I mean, there's obviously the standout Guangzhou derby. We'll give that a bit of a preview later in the show. I think another game where we talk about teams at the bottom where alarm bells are ringing, we need to talk again about Tianhai, Cam. That they're at home against Hebei, that they still don't have any points. Do you think Shun Shangfu's going to be masterminding any points anytime soon, or do they really run the risk of getting cut adrift?
He's a mastermind of something, but I not sure if it's relegation battles. Tianhai are doing worse than people expected. I remember there was a flurry of speculation before the season started that for a moment it looked as if they were going to lose all of their any decent player they had and be turned into this weird kind of youth team. It turned out that they've actually held on to their best Chinese players, most of the best Chinese players, they aren't a team, I think most people now think they're not a team who should be bothered by relegation, but they've made such a bad start.
I think any reaction to Tianhai is a little premature. You know, they have hands down had the most difficult start in the league. You know, opening the season at Evergrande, they then played against Shenzhen and lost very, very late in that match. And then to have your first home match against Shandong, another of the top sides in the league, it's a tough start for them. So I think this match this week against Hebei, against a relatively weak side, is sort of where we see, you know, where we see how good they really are, and if they are a relegation team or not.
Well, Shun Shangfu against Chris Coleman, it's the battle that no one wanted, and yet it's the one that we're all going to get. So let's see how that one pans out. Brandon, you disagreed a bit with my characterization as it being a pretty limited weekend of fixtures. There's a couple of other games that did catch your eye that are coming up.
I definitely think, you know, obviously the Guangzhou derby has always been a really exciting fixture, and there's a lot to watch in that one. But outside of that, I think my own side, Guan has their toughest match so far this season with Jiangsu coming to Gongti, and it's not one I'm extremely confident about, but it should be an interesting match. At the same time, Shenzhen is hosting Shandong. Shenzhen is I think we'd all say overachieving right now on 6 points, winning their first two matches. Shandong just one above them in fourth place on 7 points. I think that's a pretty interesting match. Definitely one to watch to see if Shenzhen is for real and what is going on in Shandong right now.
Yeah, plenty of goals at both ends, that's for sure. And a fair shout that Shenzhen may be the surprise package of the season so far. The big game is obviously the Guangzhou derby, and there's no way that, you know, this one's always high scoring, even if you factor in how these two teams are playing so far this year. And we brought on board a special guest to assist us with a fan's eye preview of the game. And we are joined by a special guest making another pod debut this season. We're really mixing things up with a bit of squad rotation. We have Matt Parker, who's based in Guangzhou. Matt, welcome to the pod.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Thank you so much.
And you are, am I correct, one of our longer-suffering RNF correspondents and supporters on Wild East Football. Can you give us a bit of background for how long you've been following the team and how you got into them?
Yeah, I've been following RNF for about 3 years. Like most Guangzhou expats, I started actually watching Evergrande, and then I got called to the lovely Dragon Football and the Fooligans, and it's just really cool to be with them. So I started about 3 years ago, I started watching more Fooligans games than Evergrande, and I've just taken a hold of that ever since.
We do love someone who sticks up for the underdog, and obviously a bit of a soft spot for RNF on the pod with their kind of kamikaze football and wonderful stadium painting jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, kamikaze has really been the order so far this season. Some remarkable high-scoring games, as I guess we expected, and a late drama in a lot of the games. I mean, what's it like watching Fooly week to week? Do you kind of enjoy the ride, or do you watch from behind the sofa, or is it kind of a combination of the two?
Definitely a combination. I mean, I was looking at the table and we have tied for the highest goal scores and for the league, and then, or we're second, I think, maybe, but we're tied for the most goals allowed. And I think every game this season we've lost basically, or has been sided at the last kick, a draw, we lost a win, we drew at the last second, and then we lost at the last second, basically. So I know when we get a lead, not to expect much. There's always, I mean, it's been that way for 2 years. I think the biggest issue a couple years ago, I remember it clearly, Beijing Goan at Yue Shoshan, and we were up and 92nd minute, header in for Beijing, and it was a draw instead of a win. And that's basically how almost every game since then has felt like.
Yeah, there's certainly lots and lots of drama that surrounds them. And your club made a lot of headlines in the close season with one of the bigger signings coming into the league as well. How has Dembele been settling in? And do you think he's going to take the CSL by storm this year?
I mean, we saw him at training before season, fan open day, and he looked pretty rusty still. A lot of issues. First game, He was not Dembele-esque, but still much better than what we had originally saw him. But these last two games, I mean, he's kind of like, you know, they call Tosic the tank, but Dembele is like an elephant out there. No one can get him down. I only see like another foreigner, like you see Hulk and all these other foreigners who fall so easily, but they're so big. But then you have someone like Paulinho and obviously Dembele, and you can't take him down. And that's really helped our midfield, which I thought was a major problem. But obviously, we have bigger issues than just that.
I think signing a few defenders might help, but let's see what they do with the mid-season transfer window. Give us a fan's eye kind of perspective on the Guangzhou derby. I mean, for the neutral and for those of us who cover the game in general, it's always a standout fixture. There's a lot of drama. We're generally in for lots of goals, but it's been an interesting, you know, obviously in terms of the fortunes of the two clubs, it's quite lopsided, but RNF have generally held their own in the derby over the years.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen in the last 3 years, I've watched 8 derbies. The way the FA Cup worked out, there was 4 for 2 seasons. And yeah, it's been up and down. But, you know, it's not like the China derby or the Shanghai or Beijing derbies. It's very relaxed, especially when they come to Yue Shoshan. Evergrande fans are sitting. There's more Evergrande fans than Fuli fans there. So it's really relaxed. Everyone's usually really respectful. The last couple of years, though, or last year for sure, after Gao Lin mocked or mimicked Zahavi's celebration, there's been a little bit more animosity. And I think fully fans, especially the locals, feel that they should be as equal to Evergrande. You know, they feel like they should be able to win those games. And so they're getting a little tired of being little brother, I think. And so they're starting to be a little bit more aggressive towards each other. But it's still really, really calm compared to most derbies across the world.
Yeah, one of the less vitriolic big city derbies in China, that's for sure. And what are your expectations going into this weekend? I mean, we mentioned that RNF get a lot of goals at both ends of the pitch. Typically, this is a high-scoring game, but Evergrande have been a bit uncertain so far this year. They've squeaked out a few wins, not actually conceded a goal yet in the league. Do you expect a closer affair this time or goals on the card again, do you think?
I definitely see there being goals. Evergrande's obviously missing a really, well, I shouldn't say missing, but they haven't really had the goal scoring output like you think they would have, even with just two foreigners being played. But I think their defense will leak some goals. I've watched a few of their games. They are very tight at times, but they do make mistakes. And I think your first couple opponents that they've had, they've been lucky not to score. So I think Fuli definitely put some goals back. But the biggest question is if Fuli can stop. And luckily, Evergrande looked down on the attack. So hopefully that gives us some confidence if they don't score in the first 45 minutes. And we can hold back there.
And who do you think are the key men who need to have a really big game if your boys are to come away with some points from this one?
Well, this year's been so weird with the transfers and obviously the U23 policy still in effect the way it is. We've seen Gui Hong and Fan Yunlong playing, but we saw Lu Lin for the first time. Obviously got two yellows and got sent off. But we need some experience. We need some people to calm down the field. So I really look to see maybe Qin Zhijiao getting his first start for the season. Even though he can be a little spacey, and he did get sent off a couple derbies ago, I really see someone like him needing to step up. You got to get Yitung. He's got to get the defense situated. And honestly, as hot and cold as he is, Li Tishang, I mean, when he's playing a defensive midfielder role, he plays much better. But when he gets put on the back line, he's either on or he's off. And so I really try to, hopefully he can play a little bit better.
Yeah, a lot of players who need to step up there to give more of a defensive shield, as you say. Well, it's been great to get some fan's eye insight. Hope that you enjoy the derby and look forward to speaking to you again later on in the year on the pod.
All right. Thanks, Steve. For sure. Anytime. I love what you guys have been doing and I'll keep following.
Brilliant. Thank you. Good stuff.
All right. Thank you.
So after that, we're going to have a chat about a couple of other topics in the second half of the show. But as always, it's time for a break where we get to revel in the results of the Phenomenon of the Week poll from last week.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
And the runaway, can you say runaway if it's a wheelchair? The rollaway winner was the wheelchair and fruit basket that Wei Shihao gave his victim. He was obviously the big story of last week. And then Tabloid Evil beating out the stands into last place. So finally someone got something over one of those stands in an otherwise great international week. It's... I'm going to let that one go eventually, I promise, but not just yet. All of that does mean that I get to go first this week, at least, with my nomination. As always, Chinese football has thrown so much at us on and off the pitch that it is difficult to know where to start. I'm going to stay with our big theme of last week and nominate, I hope I get this right, Otabek Shukarov, the player who was injured by Wei Shihao, who was the sole voice of sanity, I think, in this whole thing, who made a couple of posts on social media to plea for clemency and hope that he wasn't banned for a long time from club football, appears to have fallen on deaf ears, but nice to know that there's some sanity out there, at least. Cam, I believe that you're up next. Who or what has captured your nomination this week?
Oh, yeah, your nominations are very impressive. I would say that the player in question, he actually added Wild East football. So I'm glad we were able in our own small way to try and bring some sanity to that debate. My phenomenon of the week is going to be Jiang Su for naming five goalkeepers in their squad. And the story which has been published on Wild East football, which actually, it's going to, I'm kind of thinking a lot of people are going to read it and think it's an April Fool's, but the thing is, it's not actually an April Fool, despite the fact it highlights a lot of seemingly absurd things, it is actually 100% truthful. So I'm just going to nominate Jiangsu and their five goalkeepers for allowing us to write stories using the facts, which look like April Fools, but they're not.
Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, indeed. Mixed bag so far, as always. Brandon, which direction are you going to take us home in with your nomination?
So as much as I had in mind Shukarov as well, and not only did he at Wild East Football, but that was his first one in the post. So pat on the back there. And I also want to, you know, give a brief shout out to Nico Yanaris, Li Ke. I'm sure we're going to get to that. But overall, beyond that, I have to go with the 80th minute, because both Evergrande and SIPG scored goals in the 80th minute to win their matches. So that's mine for this week.
Pretty auspicious number, obviously. Look forward, as always, to seeing both the write-ins and the votes that the listeners come up with, and we will reflect, as always, on this poll on Twitter next week and bring three new names and phenomena to the plate. Well, there was a nice couple of lead-ins to topics there, so I think we have to start by following up, Cam, on the curious case of Jiangsu and their spree of signing youth goalkeepers to make a mockery of the rules. I mean, do we applaud them for, you know, their brazen taking advantage of CFA madness, or, you know, is this something that just shows how screwed up the regulations really are, and you need to pull out your reference books and calculators to know who's even meant to play in any given game?
I think it shows that making rules about player eligibility have to be very clear and applied evenly as possible. Something which is not happening in Chinese football, because these rules are applying differently according to different games. And it's just like digging a hole. The CFA started digging a hole when they said you could field one less under-23 player if your guys are called up. But the problem is, when you start digging this hole, you just get deeper and deeper into like a pile of muck, because eventually you get to the point where we're at now, where Jiangsu have got five goalkeepers in their CSL squad, but of course, you're never going to use five goalkeepers in a season. I mean, some teams have got four goalkeepers, but most have got three. Don't forget that this year there's a lot of youth football planned, so there's going to be a lot of games where Jiangsu are going to be able to field players according to a different rule basis than their opponents. And I think that's pretty much a disaster for sporting integrity.
Yeah, sporting integrity, something that we don't get to talk about often enough in a positive way, unfortunately. And again, you know, speaking of rules that are different depending on you know, who they're being applied to, you mentioned the debut of Yanaris there, Brandon. What's the latest on the rules and regulations? There have been some great leaks around the requirements to remain an eligible naturalized player this week.
Well, yeah, I'm sure we have very different views, I think, about those requirements, but it says that they need to learn the national anthem, they need to be able to recognize the Chinese flag, they need to have Chinese culture and politics classes, as well as a report provided to the CFA on a monthly basis by someone appointed by the club to make sure that these players have an understanding of these rules or of Chinese culture. I mean, the appointment of someone in charge is very unusual, but I think everything else is sort of, when you really get down and think about it, is not that different from how it would be in other countries with someone that wants to become a citizen. Obviously, the situation is a little different because these players are already citizens, but that was a bit of a rush. But at the same time, I'm the panda hugger of the of our panel and everything. And when I showed my wife, who is Chinese, these rules, she was laughing hysterically. So, yeah, I don't know where we stand on this.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it, Cam? Because it's like so many regulations where, on their own, out of, you know, if you remove all of the context around them, a lot of what's there is relatively uncontroversial and is what happens when you go for citizenship in many other countries. But the way that it's kind of, you know, there's tone-deaf communication and the fact that it's yet another example of kind of political interference in football, you can see where the cynicism comes from, right?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's perfectly reasonable for China to expect people who take up Chinese nationality to familiarise themselves with Chinese culture, to be able to understand the history of China and the language. I mean, I think that's really important. I think that's perfectly reasonable, but it just goes further than it would in most other places, especially the political mentions to Lenin about the Communist Party and so on and so forth. I mean, we understand the Communist Party is very central to China, that's not in question, but is it necessary for players to learn this? Let's be honest, you wouldn't be, if you went for a citizenship in the UK, you wouldn't have to learn about the Conservative Party or the Labour Party. And also, let's not forget that China is not doing this as a favour to these guys. It is expecting that these guys at least improve the level of clay in the CSL and hopefully become useful assets are very good players for the national team. It's just typical of how China handled these things. It's just heavy-handed and it just doesn't need to be quite so heavy and serious. I mean, I just think if a country's got a great culture, which China undoubtedly does, that people will want to, of their own volition, familiarise themselves with what they need to do. So it's a little bit unnecessary at the end of the day.
Well, I think the issue comes in is that, I mean, it's China. I mean, this is how China does things. It's, I mean, being a long-term resident in China, as you are, as I am, we're sort of used to these things, and this is how things are done. You know, you have these reports, you have you have that watchful hand of the neighborhood community or whatever, you know. It's sort of par for the course. You know, Cammy, your involvement this week in the protection of kids and everything is sort of the same thing. That's how China is, and it's sort of it's over the top, and yet it sort of fits with the way things are done here.
That's true, and it's a good point. However, I do think this aspect of control has increased significantly in the last few years due to political changes in China. We digress, but I think it's an important point to make to help people understand who might not be familiar with China. Like Brandon mentioned a minute ago, I was a warden for my daughter's kindergarten on Friday, where parents are asked once a month to go along and just help little kids find their way around the classrooms and find their way to the classroom in the morning, because they're really small and they might fall on the stairs or something like this. And typically you'd wear a red band on your sleeve, which marks you out as a volunteer, and it has political echoes because of the Cultural Revolution, and people wear red bands on their sleeve and they indulged in all these political extremism in the past. Of course, now it's a perfectly legitimate and harmless thing to do. But the thing is, when you go to a kindergarten in China today, you'll see the guard wear a helmet and a shield, and it looks ridiculous to Westerners, because you think you wouldn't see anyone wearing a helmet and a shield unless there was a riot going on, or it was a meeting of a local, like a battle reenactment society or something like this. But Brandon's point is absolutely true, that the things, that the way they do things here is really, can really be quite different. Therefore, we should not rush to judge it. But at the same time, to reiterate my point, I do think it's gotten more severe in recent times, and I think this ruling goes a little bit further than it has to.
I mean, it's about seeing everything in that context, right? I mean, it's similar to a lot of, you know, criticism that was doing the rounds when that picture of the PPT presentation from, I think it was Guangzhou RNF, right, with their, you know, rules and regulations for the new season. And they had 18 of them, which is a bit crazy, because it was about three ways of saying be professional, listen to the coach and play for your teammates, just worded differently. Which, again, I'm sure all football clubs say behind the closed doors, but it's just the heavy-handed, overbearing way it's communicated. Even if it's a reasonable underlying, you know, premise, it just makes it so easy to criticize, particularly maybe for people who've got a vested interest in criticizing, or for people who don't understand that context behind it. Cam, you were going to say something there. Sorry.
I was just going to make a quick point, is that ultimately this should be like a really positive, good news story for China, that players from Europe, players with who have represented their countries at youth level, like Yanaris and Hosea have, they are choosing to give up their nationality in Europe and take Chinese passport. That's a really good story for China. But ultimately, all this episode does is, I think it's going to make at least some players who are thinking of doing the same, who have some Chinese kind of connection, to think, oh, maybe I can go and play in China and be Chinese. They're going to look at this and think, nah, I don't think so.
I think part of that, one is the point that I think Steve was getting at, that while, you know, RNF did all this, did this huge presentation, and it was probably annoying to the players and everything, they're not going to do anything more. It was sort of for the public sort of thing. It's an issue that sort of, as a China watcher, you sort of understand these things are just meant for public consumption. It's the same thing with the rules. These are things meant for public consumption. I'm sure that the CFA isn't really going to be following up on it. But at the same time, it does make for a good fodder for those who want to talk about the negative side versus what's going on the field. And at least for Guan, having Li Ke, Yanaris in the lineup, the first ever naturalized player in the CSL, he put in a fairly decent performance. Nothing to really write home about, but at the same time, definitely on par or better than what Chi Zhongguo or whoever the Chinese player, and we're talking about a player who's sort of on the outside of the national team, could have put in. So it's only one match, but I'm excited to see what he has to offer in the future.
Yeah, and I think he's clearly the pick of the bunch in terms of pedigree that's come over. But it is interesting that this kind of, you know, special regulations and othering, I mean, you just said there, you compared him to the Chinese player. I mean, they're both Chinese now at this point, and it's going to take a while, I think, and the rules maybe don't help until people see them as kind of equal. I mean, a different story of another naturalized debut in Shenhua colours, Cam, whereas, you know, Guan got to call on someone who had, I think, England representation at youth level. Shenhua wheeled out a guy with 1 minute of competitive football for Gabon, and it's fair to say, not a big upgrade on the other players that have gone before him.
No, his performance was pretty disappointing, although in his defence, pardon the pun, he was playing in defence rather than midfield. For what exact reason, I don't know. Because Shenhua had Zhu Qinjie back, who's our 18-year-old best defender at the club, basically. He's back from international duty. But unfortunately, as Bannon was saying about Yanaris, these guys are ultimately just going to be compared with the Chinese players, as rightly should be, and so far Mbombu's record coming into China before he played in China, it's not really that impressive, and so far he's only played one game, but he still has a lot of doubters to win over in this way.
Yeah, played one assist for the opposition, presumably the only way is up from there. Just to jump to a couple of questions that we've got, and it's unfortunate in a way that we don't have Jamie this week, because there's a lot of League One focus in some of the questions that Seb has sent in here. Firstly, and this is one of my personal favourite little things about Chinese football, actually, how on earth can the CFA allow a beach soccer game to count as being a league game? I mean, this is referring to the game up in Liaoning, where they had a terribly low crowd for it, and the pitch appeared to be more sand than grass. Personally, Cam, I don't know how you feel about this. I kind of like and find charming the fact that games never get postponed or called off, no matter how bad the conditions, no matter how bad the weather.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. I think that it's kind of a good thing.
I mean, there's a massive, massive snow in Liaoning, in Shenyang, the last week. And so that the pitch was cleared and that they had a playable surface that wasn't covered in snow was pretty impressive as it is. And, you know, this is an issue we talk about every season with northern China. The weather is not very cooperative. And, you know, the league, they've put money in with the changes and everything, that you get money for keeping everything up to par or whatever. But yeah, I think this was sort of it was a little tough for Liaoning for this one.
Yeah, and again, I think one of the unique challenges that maybe people on the outside don't always see is just the vastness of the country and the extreme weather conditions that you get kind of at the different parts of the season, depending if you're up north or down south, does put a strain on the pitches. A couple of other questions while we're dipping into League One. You know, do we feel that Shanxi has a real shot for promotion? And, well, fighting words here, can Oscar be the next Steve? Because we're looking at some new goal-scoring sensations down there. Brandon, obviously it's very early in the season, but, you know, it's difficult to pick any standout teams in League One at this point.
I don't know why Shanxi can't be. Oscar obviously was one of the better moves for League One this year. We talked a lot about Shanxi being a really well-supported side as well. And so I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Shanxi and Changchun, you know, Changchun
yeah,
comes back up and Shanxi gets back in the gets in the CSL where sort of they belong, considering the size of their
fan base and felt in the Super League for the first year at least. Would this be a good thing for Chinese football, getting those kind of 20,000-30,000 plus Xi'an fans some top flight football once again?
Absolutely, and I think if Shanxi got promoted to the CSL, I'm pretty sure they'd be selling a stadium out every week. It's a lot of parallels with YNBN, as you said. As some people may not know, Shanxi actually lost the promotion playoff to the China League One, but unfortunately, due to some fairly chaotic proceedings in League One, YNBN went out of business, so Shanxi managed to get promoted by default. I'm sure that Shanxi themselves would have preferred to have done on a pitch, but if anyone deserves that kind of promotion, it's Shanxi because of the fan base.
Yeah, and the team that beat them to get there kind of mired bottom of the league at the moment as well. It's remarkable how things can change. I mean, Cam just mentioned there that we saw Yanbian go bust. We saw a lot of teams in the lower leagues fold in the close season. What do you think this says about the overall strength of the pyramid, Brandon? And do you think we've talked in the past about, you know, expansion and maybe, you know, growing the size of the top two tiers? Do you think that's something that we need to put on hold until some of these lower clubs are a bit more stable? Or does it in a way accelerate the case that they need that increased TV revenue?
You know, it would be good for the CSL to expand, but I think the plan of expansion is fairly smart, where it starts out with the lower league and then moves into the CSL. But the reality is that the lower leagues, especially League Two, is the sort of thing that the investment changes very quickly. And, you know, we've seen even at the CSL level where teams, there'll be money in for a couple years and then without success or with other issues, the backers pull out fairly quickly. In League Two, it's really a year or two at most, and the money people are out fairly quickly. And I think that's sort of what we saw this year. So it'll be really interesting now with the City Group, they're getting involved in the lower divisions in China, how long they decide to stick it out, and if they really put the money that's needed to get that side up into the CSL at some point.
Yeah, I think we can keep our powder dry on the City Group one for a little bit longer, because that probably needs more time to get into than we have this week. But just briefly, I mean, do you share the kind of sentiments that Brandon's come up with there, Cam, in terms of you have to grow from the bottom of the pyramid upwards, even though there isn't any money there at the moment?
Yeah, I do. As Brandon said, League Two in particular is very chaotic. Almost impossible to keep track of which teams are taking part in that league every year. And if you don't have stability at the bottom level in the pyramid, then it goes by definition that compromises what's happening at the top. I do think there is a plan to expand the CSL to 18 clubs in the next few years. I personally would like to see that happen, but I think that should only happen if it's going to make the whole game overall more stable. And at this point, it's unclear. I mean, I do know that a lot of the teams in Division 2 and through the the second and third tiers, which folded or didn't get their licenses renewed. I think a lot of that was to do with the fact that this rule has been put in place to make clubs more sustainable, at least make them run in a more sustainable manner. So hopefully we'll see the fruits of that in the next couple of years, and that can help expand the CSL. I think 18 teams would be a good thing, and the CL1 and the CL2 as well become more broad. But at this exact point in time, things are very much in flux.
Cautiously positive note for us to end on there, at least, and you know, a rare chance to kind of give some good governance in the game a bit of credit as well, so we should embrace that while it's there. It's been a good and free-ranging discussion once again, guys, and listeners, hope you enjoyed this pod as always. If you did, please do leave us a rating or a review wherever you found and listened to this podcast. It really does help us. Share with your friends and colleagues also, and do consider sponsoring us on Patreon if you do get enjoyment from following the pod every week. We would very much appreciate that, and you can find all of the relevant links in our Twitter feed and at wildeastfootball.net. That is your lot of Chinese football news, views, and truth being stranger than fiction for this April Fool's special edition this year. Cam, thanks as always for trying to be the voice of sanity when all around you is going to madness here.
Yeah, cheers, Steve. Just off to write a post explaining to everybody that the April Fool's story is actually completely true.
And Brandon, thank you as always for some fine, fine panda hugging. We know that you'll never let us down.
I do know the Chinese anthem. I know what the flag looks like, and I know the history of the party, so naturalize me next.
And he's never been capped for the USA, folks, so you might be missing out on a trick there. And I'd like to point out at this point, I have no England caps either, so, you know, scouts out there, give us a call. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast, brought to you by Wildeast Football. I've been your host, Steve Crooks. We'll see you again next week.
The Chinese football podcast, brought to you by Wildeast Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。